I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. A grisly discovery in the sub-basement of an apartment building in the Tacony neighborhood of Philadelphia 10 days ago is shocking and deeply disturbing. Four adults with intellectual disabilities were found behind a locked door, malnourished, dirty, with signs of abuse. One was chained to the boiler. Four people have been arrested, charged with kidnapping, assault, conspiracy, and false imprisonment. Linda Ann Weston has been accused of being the ringleader of a scheme to bilk these adults, and maybe others, from their Social Security disability checks. It's an evolving story that now involves six states, the judicial system, the Department of Human Services, and other agencies. It also raises questions about the social safety net for adults with disabilities. It's our topic for today's Radio Times. We've asked two Philadelphia Daily News reporters to join us on Radio Times. Julie Shaw is a reporter at the Daily News, where she writes about court cases, crime, and immigrants. And Julie, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
Barbara Laker is with us, and she's an investigative reporter for the Philadelphia Daily News. In fact, won a Pulitzer Prize in 2010 with Wendy Ruderman for her investigative reporting. And Barbara, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. And Audrey D. Cochia is with us as well, co-founder, executive director of Visions for Equality Incorporated. She's been active in the disability movement for over 35 years. And Dee Cochia, nice to have you back with us Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Barbara, if I can begin with you, and I just have to say, and I don't want to overstate it, but this is a very difficult story to read about because you see people who have been allegedly taken advantage of, abused, malnourished. What's been the effect on you to cover this story?
It's really hard to know that someone would do this to another human being, and not just one, but a lot of people. She started out way back, years ago, abusing her siblings.
This is Weston.
Yes, Linda Ann Weston, the ringleader of this. And then abused her children, and then preyed on the most vulnerable people in society. And she found people who were mentally challenged and convinced them to, I guess, come with her, that she would help them, and then she stole their Social Security money and tortured them in a dungeon, basically, for years, some of them for years, and she kept doing this from state to state to state. So it's horrific to know that someone would do that, and to, obviously, we didn't see the people in the basement, but you could see the remnants of it, and you could hear what their words, and it's really chilling.
In fact, you've been to the top of the stairs, I guess, to look down into this basement.
Yes.
What does it look like?
It's horrible. I mean, you see the boiler where one of them was chained to. They had to go to the bathroom in a bucket. It's the kind of place you wouldn't even put your belongings in, nothing. You just wouldn't use it because it's an unlivable dungeon.
Julie, let me go back to the beginning, and this, these four adults were discovered in this basement. Who discovered them?
The landlord of the Tacony building discovered them. He just happened to be in the two-floor apartment building doing some maintenance, and he was in the upper basement looking for tools. He noticed that it was strange, first of all, that the light bulbs were missing from the upper basement. It was dark. He went back to his truck outside to get a flashlight. He came back, and he heard a dog barking in the sub-basement where no one goes. And there are no pets allowed in that building. So he went down to the sub-basement and then noticed that the abandoned boiler room had a chain wrapped around the door handle. That also was unusual. He opened up the door, and he saw two faces popping out of a blanket, a man and a woman's. He saw two dogs, and then there were two other adults in there too, but he did not initially see them. He went back out of the building to call police on his cell phone. He called 911, and then police came. They went back down, and that's when they discovered there are four people in the boiler room.
And malnourished, at least.
Malnourished, emaciated, right? And police could immediately tell that these were special needs people.
There's much of this story that I want to make sure our listeners understand, but as someone who's been in this disabilities movement for decades now, I'm curious about your response to what you've been reading.
Well, certainly this personifies the worst of humanity, what someone can do to another human being. But in addition to that, I mean, we see things similar to this to a degree every day, insofar as we often get reports of people who are being living with someone in their home. Often it could be a family member or living alone and a neighbor looking after them, but those other folks being the rep payee. And you can see that they're not well cared for.
And the rep payee is someone that is essentially, I guess, getting the money, the Social Security disability check.
That's correct. And they're supposed to be, a financial agent for the person, making sure that their needs are met, but they're often not doing that with the money.
Barbara, were neighbors suspicious? Were there concerns about what might be going on in this basement or sub-basement or even in the apartment in this building?
Well, they'd only been in the Tacony building for a short amount of time, Linda Ann Weston had. But we've been to other places where she lived in Philadelphia, and she moved around a lot. And most neighbors did hear, like, or saw things that were very, like, weird or unusual. And one landlord who rented to her told me that Linda Ann Weston had actually set fire to a top floor, maybe by doing drugs or whatever. She doesn't know how. People do say they saw a lot of people in the house, and that Gregory Thomas, her boyfriend, would just box into the air, like be an air boxer.
Mm. And he was a professional boxer.
He was a professional boxer way back. But people heard strange sounds from the house. Some people did see a person in there who were in one of the homes that did look malnourished. DHS had been called on this woman over several years.
And Julie, we should say that four people have been arrested, including this woman who has been called the mastermind, Linda Ann Weston. Go ahead.
Right. So four people have been arrested, Linda Ann Weston, her boyfriend, Gregory Thomas, another man who described himself as a pastor. His name is Eddie Wright. Those three were arrested on that same day of the discovery, October 15th. And then 4 days later, Linda Ann Weston's daughter, Jean McIntosh, was also arrested. I wanted to add that.
Go ahead.
Jean McIntosh actually lived in that Tacony building where the four people were found in the basement dungeon. She lived on a second floor apartment. And at the time that police were looking for, went to the boiler room, Jean McIntosh had in her closet a niece of Linda Ann Weston's named Beatrice Weston in Jean McIntosh's closet. She was later moved, and police on the Tuesday after the initial discovery found Beatrice Weston in a Frankfurt home. She was very, very malnourished. She was discovered to have been shot by pellet guns. She had cigarette burns over her, badly beaten and bruised. But I wanted to add that.
I just add something there? And this is a horrifying case, but this girl was discovered, and I just have to quote something from the police commissioner, Charles Ramsey, veteran police officer. He says, "I've been a police officer for a long time, 40 years, and I've never seen a victim whose injuries were any more severe than what I saw last night." And this is talking about Beatrice, at least not a living victim. It makes you want to cry when you see her. And obviously, this is a man who has seen a lot and moved to tears when he saw this girl, Beatrice, and she's the niece of Linda Ann Weston.
Correct.
Has anyone seen what she looks like? Have you seen it?
No. I mean, Julie? Police have told us not to even try to interview her. She is in some kind of, you know, mental health facility or some kind of hospital care, actually. And, I mean, she apparently is just in such bad shape that they have not wanted anyone to, you know, try to even go out and interview her.
And does anyone know if she has intellectual disabilities or?
I don't think she does.
Yeah, she took Linda Ann Weston took custody of Beatrice when Beatrice's mother, Vicky, was unable to take care of her. And there was a relative who did see Beatrice in one of the houses that Linda Ann Weston lived in. And he went in there and saw Beatrice, like, with bruises on her and very malnourished. But the police did get involved, and we understand that Linda Ann Weston told the police that Beatrice was then living in New Jersey, and then shortly after that, Linda Ann Weston moved. And she did that a lot, so even when authorities were called, by the time they got out to the house, Linda Ann Weston was gone.
And that explains why there are, I think, six states that are involved in this investigation, because she was in Texas for a while, she was in Florida, Virginia.
Right.
Right, and then I think there are some connections to Georgia and North Carolina that police are either looking for potential victims or relatives of potential victims.
Did you want to add something more, Julie, when I interrupted you?
Oh, that's okay. I guess you had asked whether or not any of the neighbors in the Tocconi building where the basement dungeon victims were found, if they had known anything. I did speak to two residents in that building, and they said that they were not aware of anything, absolutely strange or horrific going on, but they had heard that new people moved in, they saw new people coming in, and they had seen some things moved around in the upper basement where there's storage, but still, they just, I guess they did not realize that anything really horrific was going on.
Dee, let me turn to you. What could someone, if they had been concerned, what could someone have done if they wanted to report something that seemed suspicious?
Well, one of the concerns we have in Pennsylvania right now is we have an Adult Protective Services law that was put into place last year after fighting for it for 7 years, but it hasn't been effectuated because the governor says there's no money for it. So as long as we don't have a hotline, we certainly need a hotline where people can call in. We need some people trained to be investigators to go out. And eventually, as we see in child services and in aging, we need agencies around the state who take responsibility and have the authority to walk into a situation like that and do something. We often get calls about families, and it's very hard to walk into a family situation, even for the police, unless you have some evidence that something is going on. And without Adult Protective Services actually being effective, we cannot do much of anything.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Audrey D. Cochia, co-founder, executive director of Visions for Equality Incorporated. She's been active in the disability movement for over 35 years. She's a member of the Pennsylvania Planning Advisory Council, also chairperson of the Pennsylvania Community Advocacy Coalition. And she told me that there is a walk against abuse that's going to take place on November 2nd at the plaza at 5th and Market Street between 12 and 1 o'clock. We have two Philadelphia Daily News reporters joining us as well, Julie Shaw, Barbara Laker, and we are talking about this deeply disturbing case, but important one as well, the discovery of four adults in a sub-basement in an apartment building in Philadelphia, raising questions about protections for people with disabilities. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Geographical Society of Philadelphia supports WHYY and will host a week-long festival, the first annual GeoFest, featuring films, feasts, and discussions with explorers and travelers. GeoFest runs November 6th through 12th at various locations in Philadelphia and the Main Line. Guests include La Colombe's Todd Carmichael and endurance swimmer Diana Nyad. Tickets and information online at geographicalsociety.org or 610-649-5220.
This is Christine Dempsey.
And Ed Cunningham.
It took some work, but we made it.
That's right. We'd like to thank over 6,800 of you who chose to make a pledge of support during our recent October FM campaign.
And thanks to over 800 of you who participated in the new YStream service.
We'll invest your dollars right back into the programming you enjoy.
Programs like Morning Edition, Newsworks Tonight, and Radio Times.
Over 50% of WHYY's funding comes from member support. So to you we say...
Thank you.
ChristianaCare Health System's Center for Heart and Vascular Health supports WHYY. Studies show experience makes a difference in patient outcomes. Recognized by the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, ChristianaCare cardiovascular surgeons perform more than 800 open heart procedures each year, and the team of heart specialists treats more than 8,000 total heart and vascular patients annually. ChristianaCare, with locations in Pennsylvania and Delaware. More online at christianacare.org/heartleaders.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about the discovery of four malnourished, frightened adults with intellectual disabilities that were found locked in a dirty basement in the Tacony section of Philadelphia in an apartment building. That discovery has led to arrests, charges of abuse, and allegations of a scam involving Social Security disability checks. It's also raised a whole host of questions about how to protect those with disabilities. And we're talking about all of this with Audrey Cochia, Julie Shaw, and Barbara Laker, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Barbara, let me go back to you and even go back to Linda Ann Weston. She's been called, accused of being the mastermind of this particular scheme. She actually served time in prison. What was she found guilty of?
Well, she was found guilty of third-degree murder for starving her her sister's boyfriend in a closet. And it was a horrific case, but she was convicted and sentenced, and then she served about, it was what, seven to...
Four years.
Four years she actually served.
And this was someone that she had kept in a closet...
And starved to death.
And starved to death in her apartment, or where she was living?
Where she lived, yes.
And what do we know about the trial? I mean, 4 years doesn't seem like a very long time for a crime of that magnitude.
That's how long she served. She was She was given 7 to 10 years.
Well, she was sentenced to 4 to 10 years. Maybe I should just start with what happened. She and her sister Venus Weston lived in an apartment in Strawberry Mansion,
West Philly.
Yeah. I guess north, yeah. But Strawberry Mansion. Her sister was pregnant, and they blamed this guy Bernardo Ramos. He was the father, but he said he would not support the baby when it was born. And so they basically tied him up and locked him in a closet, and they did feed him sometimes, but he starved to death after 2 months in the closet. The two sisters were not, this happened in late 1981. The body of Bernardo Ramos was found in a different building. Mm. They had taken him to an abandoned convent in Spring Garden after he was dead and dumped his body there, basically. Two men found the body, flagged down police, and police initially thought this man died of natural causes. Okay, so then come January 1983, a family member notified police of the sister's involvement. Mm-hmm. They were arrested and charged. Linda Weston was initially deemed incompetent to stand trial. She did spend some time in county prison and at the Philadelphia State Hospital.
For psychiatric evaluation?
Right. And she was in various reports in both 1983 and 1984. She was found to have some kind of intrinsic brain damage and schizophrenia and believed to be mildly mentally retarded. Venus Weston, the sister, did plead guilty to third degree murder in 1983, but it wasn't until December of 1984 when Linda Ann Weston was finally deemed competent to stand trial. She did so the next day, and so for about a week-long judge trial, various people testified, and the judge found her guilty of third-degree murder. Mm-hmm. The next year, she was sentenced to 4 to 10 years, and she served with credit for time served in the county prison, as well as when she was in the Philadelphia State Hospital. So along with the state prison time, she spent 4 years in prison.
And when she was released, I'm going back to you, Barbara, and then, Dee, I'll get you back in on the conversation here. When she was released from prison, she was given four children were returned to her.
Right. She went to family court and asked the court to get custody of her children, and a judge granted her custody of her children. So it's not clear how much the judge, if any, that he knew about this murder case, or if that would play a role in you know, getting her children back, but she was able to get her children back.
But it, I mean, I'm no lawyer here, but it seems that would be a basic thing for a judge to do, which is to look at someone's background to see if they're capable of taking care of their children.
Definitely.
And this is also the time, around the same time, that she also gets what, partial custody of her niece Beatrice, the
right.
The
then
girl
she later got custody of Beatrice, and the court granted her that too.
And she was on parole, but it seemed like she also was evading any kind of meeting with her parole officer.
Yes, she was not showing up for some of the meetings, the required meetings with her parole officer, and then she absconded and then moved over and over and over again. And at one point, she was she had a woman with her, Maxine Lee, who was also mentally challenged in Philadelphia, who'd lived with her for a while, and she had moved to Virginia with Maxine Lee. And then Maxine Lee ends up dead in that house, and the coroner comes, and the medical examiner rules that she died of meningitis, but a contributing factor was malnutrition. Mm-hmm. And the medical examiner wouldn't tell me how much Maxine Lee weighed. But now police are re-examining this case and reopening it, thinking that maybe the malnutrition played much more of a role in her death.
Mm. Let me get you back in on the conversation, Dee, and I'm just thinking about how the system is supposed to work, especially if we're talking about either children at risk or adults at risk. Can you weigh in on that?
Well, I think that there are multiple failings within the systems that leave people still at risk, and that they really need to be looked at. Systems like DHS, systems that deal with people with intellectual disabilities. First of all, in this state alone, we have 16,000 people with intellectual disabilities who are not being watched by anybody.
What is
because
that?
They're on the waiting list for services. If you're not getting services, active service, you're not being seen by, say, a supports coordinator or a case manager. So those folks are pretty much just sitting out there in people's homes, often with elderly caregivers, and not being looked after in any way. But I find that the system also is very reluctant sometimes when they find things to take the legal action that they should be required and responsible to do. They basically try to deal with it internally and then put it away.
But do you think, I mean, this is a horrifying case. Do you think this is an aberration, or does it tell us something about some of the holes in the system that we have?
I think it tells us a lot about the holes in the system, in the Social Security system, also in the system that protect children, as well as that don't protect people with developmental disabilities who are adults.
Julie, let me turn to you, and I should say that in Linda Ann Weston's apartment, there were something like 50 identifications or IDs of some sort that were found there, and there are questions about whether this was some kind of a Social Security check scam. What can you tell us about that?
Right. Police have said that they have found on Linda Ann Weston's personal belongings, so I'm not sure if it was the apartment or actually her belongings, 50 identifications for over 50 people, for about 50 people. So they included power of attorney documents related to, some of the people are Social Security cards or other documents. And so police are looking into, who these people are, where they're from and what relation they may have to Linda Ann Weston.
And have you talked to people that work at the Social Security office about this particular case?
I've reached out to the Social Security Administration's press office, and basically I've gotten kind of a generic statement from them that they're increasing their oversight of these so-called representative payees. But I've spoken to a disability benefits lawyer. His name is Ted Walkenhorst, who works at the Disability Benefits, I think it's Center in Jenkintown. And he has explained to me that I guess the way the representative payee system works is if someone who is getting Social Security disability benefits, either because they have a physical disability or a mental disability, they can designate someone to be a representative payee or someone like a guardian or family member to get the benefits on their behalf. if someone is actually classified as mentally retarded, and that's the word, I guess, that they use, then automatically there needs to be a representative payee, right, because that, you know, person of who is in that classification can't, you know, manage their own financial, right, matters. We don't know for sure whether or not the four individuals in the dungeon basement were deemed mentally retarded or not. One of the victims in the basement, his name was Herbert Knowles. He's now 40 years old. He's originally from Norfolk, Virginia. And I have spoken to his grandmother down there. And she's just explained how he initially was in the family's care. But then Linda Ann Weston was in Norfolk, Virginia, and had befriended him through another family member. And the grandmother was, you know, speculating that perhaps she pretended to be his guardian or his stepmother. And perhaps, you know, the two of them went to a Social Security office. And Herbert Knowles, the victim, because he does have a mental capacity of a child and was very trusting, that he, perhaps agreed to have her, Linda Weston, be his representative payee. I mean, that's a possibility.
Sure. But Dee, let me go back to you. But what we're also, whatever, and we're still trying to figure out what happened in cases like this, but we are talking about someone who served time in prison being the representative payee for someone getting Social Security disability checks.
Right. Well, I think the system's pretty loose, actually. Whether Social Security just says they have a lot of people that they're doing it for, that's no excuse for not doing a good job. And in fact, it's very easy to become a rep payee.
Is it?
Yes, it is. And then you go online, just look, you'll see it's easy to fill out the paperwork online. Often, you do go into the office, but I am not aware of any criminal checks that they're doing. They're not doing any child line checks. They're not doing any kind of federal checks. They don't even do a photo check to see if you or the person or the people who are deemed to be who they say they are. And all they do ask you is, have you committed a felony or a crime? And if you say no, they obviously, although they'll tell you that they do further investigations, I think that's far from the truth.
And that's Audrey D. Cochia. She is the co-founder and co-executive director of Visions for Equality Incorporated. She's been active in the disability movement for more than 35 years. And two Philadelphia Daily News reporters are with us as well, Barbara Laker and Julie Shaw. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Barbara, where are the four people that were found in the basement? Where are they today?
They're in a rehab center being cared for, and some have been reunited with family members, and so they're in a safe place now, and I'm sure they'll need a lot of help getting over this trauma.
Well, I was wondering about that, but, and I'm back to you, Dee, which is the kind of help that anyone under those circumstances would need, but also thinking of someone that might have intellectual disabilities and be victimized under these brutal circumstances.
I think it's very easy for them to be see somebody commit criminal activity with someone with a disability. They're very trusting, usually, folks that we work with every day. They're very kind, very open, and it's easy often to win them over and then think that you're their friend, and it leaves them really very open to criminal activity and abuse and neglect. I mean, we've run into a sizable amount of this. I actually think that we ought to be looking further into some of the stuff around boarding homes, where we have many, many people with intellectual disabilities living and people are getting their checks. What kind of oversight are they getting? Sometimes you have 10 to 15 people living in boarding homes, and those checks are coming into that boarding home. And sometimes owners own 5 or 6 of those boarding homes. I think it would be interesting to see just how much oversight Social Security is doing over some of that stuff.
And that's their job? I mean, part of their job is to provide that kind of oversight for who is getting the Social Security checks?
Well, everybody is supposed to do an annual reporting of how they spend the money for an individual.
Julie, what I've learned, certainly reading about these cases, is that there are stories of people disappearing or running away from home, and one gets a sense of families in some degree of chaos. A lot of these people are poor, which of course adds to some of the chaos as well. Can you talk a little bit about, I guess, how especially these four people in the basement, sort of how they ended up there? Do you know?
Well, I think, you know, somehow each four had befriended Linda Ann Weston, or Linda Ann Weston had befriended them because she was the alleged controlling, you know, mastermind in this case. And she just gained their trust, and perhaps because their family members either, you know, didn't really keep tabs on them, or, you know, that they perhaps let either the people ran away, or they let, you know, someone else, you know, take care of them. So these four eventually did, you know, end up with Linda. Mm-hmm. They got at different points. Two of the victims, Tamara Breeden and Edwin Sanabria, are from Philadelphia, and I believe they were boyfriend and girlfriend, and they might have run away and then, you know, somehow met up with Linda Ann Weston. And then there was also, Herbert Knowles was from Norfolk, Virginia, and then the last victim, Derwin McLemire, was from Florida, so he might have been probably the last leg of, you know, their going around from state to state across the country, and they might have picked him up, you know, in Florida most recently.
And Barbara, you had mentioned the fact that they moved from state to state. I mean, it seems as if they were, or she was, sort of one step ahead of, if not the law, certainly people investigating what might be going on in a particular apartment.
Yeah, I think that really helped her get away with this for so long, that she moved so often. And I think also a lot of the people she picked on, she first gained so much of their trust that they could have just signed their Social Security check and handed her the cash, and she could have said, look, I'll take care of this for you, I'm going to feed you, I'm going to take care of you. And I think they were so vulnerable and so wanted to be taken care of and didn't really at that time in their lives have anyone, that I think they kind of just grew more and more dependent on her. And because they were malnourished, they weren't strong, they weren't, you know, either they didn't know how to get away, even if they could. And I think they grew so very, very dependent on her and scared to leave because, I mean, they were beaten. They were shot with pellets. They were just really abused. And so I think they were just terrified to leave.
And you've been working on this story for almost 2 weeks now. I mean, do you see that there's just much more to investigate? It seems like every day there's another revelation and something else to investigate.
Yeah, it seems like every day we hear from or uncover a new victim or a new place she'd been to or other people she'd abused. And also there could be other people who perhaps have died that we don't even know about. And because a lot of the people she picked on were not connected to families anymore or felt very lost.
And that's Barbara Laker, Julie Shaw, joining us today in Radio Times. Both reporters for the Philadelphia Daily News. Audrey D. Cochia is with us, co-founder, executive director of Visions for Equality Incorporated. We have some callers I do want to get in at 1-888-477-9499. After this very short break, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Drexel University Online supports WHYY and offers over 100 online degrees for those thinking about sharpening work skills or advancing their career. With a focus on practical learning and faculty committed to excellence in education, Drexel offers online master's degrees in health informatics, information systems, and information science. To learn more about earning a master's, bachelor's, or a certificate, it's drexel.com. To request more information, drexel.com.
Since 2006, 40,000 people have been murdered in Mexico as drug cartels battle each other and the Mexican military. On the next Fresh Air, we hear from journalist Joan Grillo. He spent 10 years covering the conflict, speaking with government officials, American agents, drug traffickers, and victims of the violence. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll look at the new arms race for drones. Everyone from Hezbollah to Mexican drug cartels wants them. Also, the World Series. Is it possible that the Cards lost a game because of a bungled phone call? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. And again, today on the show, in this first hour of Radio Times, we're talking about the discovery of four adults with intellectual disabilities that were found locked in a sub-basement in an apartment building in Philadelphia. That has led to arrests, allegations of fraud and kidnapping and other serious charges, and has raised a whole host of questions about the protection for people with disabilities, especially adults with disabilities. And Julie Shaw, Barbara Laker have been covering this story for the Philadelphia Daily News. And Audrey D. Cochia is, again, co-founder, executive director of Visions for Equality Incorporated. She's also a member of the Pennsylvania Planning Advisory Council and is chairperson of the Pennsylvania Community Advocacy Coalition. And on November 2nd, next week, between 12 and 1, there's a walk against abuse related to this case at 5th and Market Streets here in Philadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Alice from New Jersey to join our conversation. Alice, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you, Marty.
You're welcome.
And thank you for putting together always such a valuable program.
Thank you.
I just want to express my concern and raise some awareness among your listeners, in the context of this very terrible, sad story. I just heard that Pennsylvania's governor is proposing reducing Medicare coverage for long-term care and oversight for disabled adults.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what this story shows us is how significantly disabled adults are highly vulnerable, and we really can't relinquish social responsibility for ongoing oversight of their needs and their safety.
Well, Alice, let me give Dee Cochia a chance to weigh in on that. And Dee, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Alice. We believe that government has a core responsibility to care for the most vulnerable in our country. And Pennsylvania has been really at the low end of this. It's next to the last four states who even have any adult protective not having any adult protective services in place. Our concern is that we are hearing from the governor and from the Department of Welfare that they're considering cutting back services significantly. And we have sat with the Secretary of Welfare and been told that if families can't take care of their sons and daughters anymore, perhaps the state can find people on welfare, on unemployment, who can take them into their homes and adopt them.
Is that a quote?
That's a quote, yes. I find that, I'm a parent, my daughter's 46 years old, she still lives at home with us. I find that insulting for the 46 years that I have been her caregiver, to think that I'm going to put her in the hands of someone else who's going to adopt her. And especially after looking at a situation like this, where people are so desperate for money, people on welfare and unemployment, what kind of culpable situation we might put her in.
Mm. Julie, something that in fact, we were talking about during the break, but I also read about is that the FBI, I guess the Justice Department, is considering charging a hate crime related to this case.
Well, the federal hate crime law was expanded in 2009 to include people with disabilities. The FBI is cooperating in this case, and if anyone would charge, it would probably be the U.S. Attorney's Office who would charge them. I don't know where this stands right now, so it's not clear if they will actually be charged with, you know, any hate crimes.
But it's interesting that is being raised. At least.
Right, right. And it's possible that, I mean, this is now a state case handled by the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office, but there's a possibility that it could be eventually handled by the U.S. Attorney's Office, since this case did cross state lines.
Let me go back to you, Barbara, and go back to the fact that something like, I think it's either six or eight juveniles and four adults were removed from an apartment.
Yes,
these are not the people that were in the basement, right? This is a whole separate group of people.
Because the police had to continue their investigation, and Beatrice, the niece, was moved, and when they went to that house, there were more people in there. But they were most horrified by what they found on the condition of Beatrice. Mm-hmm. But they took all the other children, too, into protective custody.
And doing DNA tests as well, as I understand.
They're doing DNA tests because they don't know who some of the children are. Like, I met one family who actually had lived next to Linda Ann Weston, and Linda gave this couple a baby, a two-year-old, at the end of 2008, and called this baby Little L. And Linda Ann Weston claimed it was her baby. And the couple next door had babysat the baby, fell in love with the baby. So Linda said, okay, you can adopt the baby. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after that, a couple months later, Linda left. And then her daughter, Jean McIntosh, came and said, well, I'm just going to take Little L to a birthday party. And she never came back. And it turns out that baby was one of the children rescued. And that baby, they believe, is the child of Tamara Breeden, who was in the basement.
Wow. And the grandparents of this baby are interested in adopting, is that right? Did I read that correctly?
Yes, the grandparents of the little little girl, who's now five, are want to adopt the baby. But it's just sad that, you know, she just wanted to give this baby away, and nobody really knows who. They have to confirm who these children are.
They're even, and I almost hesitate to say this, but there are even questions about whether it was a quote-unquote breeding factory, Julie. I mean, whether this was also going on.
Right, right. I mean, there have been allegations that Linda Ann Weston, you know, forced some of the dungeon basement captives to have children. I guess what I'm understanding now is that Tamara Breeden and another dungeon captive who was Edwin Senebria. Mm-hmm. They were actually boyfriend and girlfriend, so I'm not sure if it was, you know, how much force there was, honestly. And I've, you know, since I've talked to this disability benefits lawyer, I mean, he has said that there would not be any benefits financially to have more children, basically. I mean, while Linda Ann Weston could take the Social Security benefits of the captives, that they would not get extra benefits for having more children if they had what's called supplemental Social Security income, SSI, yes.
Uh-huh. Let me get Naya from West Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. And Naya, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning,
good
everyone.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to relate to you guys an experience I had this summer. I take care of my 24-year-old brother who has a neurological condition. And this neurological condition prevents him from speaking clearly. So a lot of times when I'm administrating his affairs, it requires me to call up different agencies and show them that they can legally talk to me, that I'm just acting as his mouthpiece, per se.
Mm-hmm.
So we had some questions regarding, like, what actually, like, the parameters of Social Security benefits that he was receiving. And so I took him up there to our local Social Security office, and I wanted to just fill out the paperwork that said, hey, you guys can talk to me. You have his consent. Well, before I could even get that out of my mouth, the representative at the window just shoved a paper at me and said very discouragingly, like, oh, do you want to be his representative payee? And I was like, what? Excuse me? Like, I wasn't even aware that, you know, it was so easy that I could get his checks signed over to me. And, of course, I refused, you know, because that's not my role. I'm just here to help him. But I just wanted to share that experience.
Well,
and I'll take my comments or stuff off air.
Well, Naya, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and I'm looking at Dee Cochia just to get a response. Dee?
Yeah, as I said earlier, you know, it's not hard. If you even go online and go on the website, they almost encourage you, you know, to take rep payship for folks. And it looks like it's pretty easy to do.
Mm.
And as I said, it's not usual for them to ask for a whole lot of information in order to do that. In fact, someone told me yesterday that she was, in fact, rep payee. When her husband turned 65, he went up to sign up, and they turned Repay's ship over to him, never speaking to her. They didn't know if they were still married or not. They happened to be, but and it wasn't a big deal. But it was just so easily that they just cross-reference things on their own and just are taking a lot of privileges, I think, with people. I mean, think about it. This woman was getting about $6,000 a month.
Well, I was wondering, when you add up all the... I don't know what a typical SSI check
well,
is.
Well, it depends if you're getting SSI or Social Security. And it's much different if you're on Social Security than SSI. And a lot of these people are adults. If their family members are dead, they're probably on Social Security if their family members worked, which is quite different because that is an entitlement. But it could be anywhere from $300 to $400 to $600 to $800 a month you're getting.
That's a lot of money. Naya, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let me see what Sharon from Downingtown has to say. And Sharon, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
Well, this is my daughter is 16, and I recently called. I'm in Chester County. I called Social Services and asked them what her chances of getting in a group home are. She's got an IQ of about 70, and she's very trusting. And they told me that there's no funding, basically no. They can't even look forward to any funding, and I should buy her a house and staff it myself.
Mm.
So when you hear that from somebody, you can really see how these guys just have no options. And the other thing is, I worked in a facility once as a speech pathologist. We had a guy who was unidentified, and they said he was blind and deaf and couldn't communicate. So just on a whim, I signed into his hand, and it turns out he had a six-year-old vocabulary and sign. But once again, he didn't know how to spell his name, so we didn't know who he was. And I find it ironic that we can chip our cats and dogs, but we can't do that to our children.
Well, Sharon, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I'm back to you, Dee, but also Barbara and Julie, if you want to weigh in as well. But go ahead, Dee.
Yeah, I think we're, as a community of advocates, we are quite outraged that we have a governor who says he wants to take care of people with disabilities, and he's more worried about puppy mills than he is people with most vulnerable need, and not concerned, obviously, about their abuse, neglect, and in certain cases, death.
But I'm also thinking, and before I had this job, you know, working in the social service industry or agency, when we had, you know, we had Pennhurst, and we had these large institutions where people were put, I mean, some of them well taken care of, but some of them not.
Right.
Is that, I mean, are we going to...
Well, I think most of the people that are in the system, who are known by the system and registered in the system, there is case management or supports coordination that is following them. So at least they have some oversight. It's not always reported when they find things because I think they just don't know how to handle a criminal activity, and which is certainly something that needs to be worked on. That's another flaw in the system. But I think equally importantly is that there are 16,000 people who have not, are not registered, and no one is watching what's happening to them.
There are so many things to take away, but Barbara, let me just, I mean, we're talking about, and we should say that this woman has been accused, but nonetheless, we're talking about someone that really has gamed not just the system, but several systems, the judicial system, Department of Human Services, the parole system, Social Security, you know, law enforcement. It's just, it's breathtaking when you think about it.
It really is, because she was involved with all these different systems and was able to do this for so long. I think that's the other thing. It just didn't stretch across several states, but she was able to do it for so long and to countless. I mean, we don't even know how many people, really. I mean, given those 50 ID cards, and who knows where those people are, if they are left in other states, if they're dead, alive, where they are. And so I think that's very troubling. And I mean, investigators are getting tips all the time because people think that their relatives may have been caught up with Linda Ann Weston, or they've lost track of them and wanting to know if they have their ID. And so I think it's going to take a long time to find all the victims of Linda Ann Weston.
Mm. Julie, you want to weigh in on that? I'm thinking, I mean, we can cross state lines in this country. These are, we have states, not countries. Mm-hmm. You don't need a passport. It's not that hard to drive from Philadelphia to Texas, for instance.
Right, right. No, and I mean, it does seem that she moved. I've been told her daughter, Jean McIntosh, apparently is either has a husband or ex-husband who is in the Army, that I've been told from various sources. And he, you know, was based in Killeen, Texas. And the mother apparently, you know, moved with the daughter sometimes. There seemed to be some, you know, logistical pairing between the two. So the mother and daughter, you know, seem to move across state lines together.
What's this been like for you to cover? That's what I asked Barbara at the beginning of the show, but for you?
Well, it is hard because you just imagine if you were a relative of any of these victims, you know, and you didn't know what was happening to them because some of them went missing and reported missing. And then later you hear this horrific, horrific story about what had happened to them. I mean, it just must be so traumatic for them. So I kind of imagine that, and that it hurts you.
Sure, sure. And we're almost out of time here, Dee, but any final thoughts from you?
Well, I think if I could encourage the folks that listen to your program to call Governor Corbett and ask him what he's going to do about this. Is he going to actually put some money up to see that people who are vulnerable, people with intellectual disabilities between 19 and 59, are safe, and that he put up the $6 million to start this process so we can get to, we can be sure in the future that people are protected and that there are a way for people to report if something is going on.
Well, on that note, I thank all three of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Audrey Dee Cotia, thank you very much for joining us. And again, there is a walk against abuse at 5th and Market Streets between 12 and 1 on November 2nd. Barbara Laker, thank you very much for joining us once again.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And she's investigative reporter for the Philadelphia Daily News. Won a Pulitzer Prize last year for her investigative reporting with Wendy Ruderman. And Julie Shaw, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And she's a reporter at the Philadelphia Daily News. Go to whyy.org/radio times, and you can find out much more about this program, including podcasts, email, Twitter, Facebook. It's all there. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times.